702 and Cape Talk. Entrepreneur Corner.
Entrepreneur Corner is brought to you by Calix Sandton, Oriental Plaza, Cedar Square, and Mall of Africa. Calix, for the businessman who knows what they want. Okay, 8 minutes after 11. I'm very delighted to say that I'm joined for this half an hour by Munene Khoza, who is the founder and the principal consultant of Mint Language Consultancy. Munene, thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Thank you, Eusebius.
I just put her at ease with a really like offsides dark humor joke from cradle to grave. Not quite, otherwise you'd be giving your own obituary. She's very much alive and has a fascinating backstory to her entrepreneurial journey. You grew up, as I understand it, in Johannesburg, although you were born in Pretoria.
Yeah, 100%.
We're not responsible for where we are born. We are only free to run away.
No, but had a great, great childhood. Lived in Joburg all of my life. Started off school at Sacred Heart for grade 1 and 2. And
oh, then okay. The goody two shoes people from Sacred Heart, eh?
Well, I don't know.
The liberals.
The rabble rousers, if you will. and then moved on to St. Stithians Girls College, where I was part of that first group of girls that went through that school. Mm. And it was brilliant. Yeah.
And from there, you temporarily went overseas to Cape Town.
Yes, I did some studies in the Republic of the Cape. I started off doing a BA in media and writing and English. You know, after school, I realized there was this thing in me that just wanted to write and learn more about language. And so that seemed like the right way to go.
I think that's stunning, particularly because so many, I don't know what your family background is, you may not share with us, but certainly many of us who are sent to these former Model C schools or private schools, our parents, middle-class parents, are often the worst. Because they say, you can go study media and English. I'm not going to pay for that.
Yeah.
You must go to UCT and do business science. So tell me a little bit about your teenage years. Where did your passion come from for English and language? And what did your family make of it?
So I think I'm lucky in that I've got a very supportive family. My parents were kind of like, do your thing. And if it's a balls up, then we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Mm. But I was a talker at school. I loved writing. I had the most phenomenal English teachers. Often at school, when you're studying English, it's not about the literature itself. It's not about semicolon versus dash versus, you know, whatever the punctuation might be. I think English is something that teaches you how to think, how to articulate yourself, how to formulate a logical argument. And so, yes, there is a tendency to push kids toward commercial, type subjects as they enter university. But I followed my passion, and my passion really has been quite rewarding.
Isn't it amazing? I feel so bad for other subject teachers, eh? It is always the English teacher that gets that reference point back when we're adults, whether it be through debate classes. And I don't know why they get settled with debating, as if a bio teacher can't be the one given that extra mural. But yeah, the odes to English teacher. Yeah. One can do a whole show on that.
Absolutely. I think, like I said, it just speaks to the fact that English is about, you know.
So name your teacher if you can remember. There's a question.
Oh, there were several.
Show some love to them.
A certain Miss Ruth Everson, a certain Miss Cheryl Reed, really just amazing women who, yeah, you really just learn about life as you learn about English.
That is so true. Absolutely. Yeah. So now you get to UCT. You've got this vision. You've got a passion for English, a passion for media as well.
Yeah.
Was it all that you expected it to be? Did it turn out to be exactly that?
Well, to some extent. I got a bit of a, let's say I went through a bit of an existential/quarter-life crisis.
That's the whole point of university.
When I grew a little bit concerned about actually what are the job prospects. So you do bring up a relevant point. I think if you study business science or BCom, the path is fairly clear. But if you're in the humanities, not so much. Mm. So I toyed with the idea of potentially going into teaching and worked a little bit in the space, teaching English. But then somebody suggested to me, you know, living abroad or just taking yourself into taking yourself totally out of your comfort zone might be what you need. Mm. And that's, you know, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to go and study in England, and in Scotland. And yeah, man, that experience just makes you grow up. You're out there, you don't know a single bard. In Scotland, you don't understand what anyone's saying.
Where in Scotland were you?
I was in Stirling.
Okay.
Very lovely, small university, quite similar to, I would say, like a Rhodes here. Mm. And it was really, really strong English linguistics program. And that's where I fell in love with the mechanisms of the language. I leaned more toward the language side of things than the literature.
Now, what I can't understand in your biography is there you are in love with the Queen's language,
yes,
with writing, yes, with media. You've now been abroad as well. So, you know, we can now also put on the CV Miss Cosmopolitan. And then you end up at Accenture and Deloitte? Hi, man. How did that happen?
Yeah, maybe I've just negated everything I've just said, but.
Were you crunching numbers or helping them to narrate what they're doing with the numbers?
So, funny enough, you know, you talk Deloitte, you talk Accenture, and people run straight to the numbers and that side of things. But there are several practitioners in those organizations who are, you know, anthropologists, linguists like myself. Because there's, you know, language function is a function in every business.
That's so true.
And there's a business case for impactful language.
Hmm.
And so this is, you know, I ended up doing management consulting.
For how long?
That was about 4 years.
So how long have you been gone?
From management consulting, I moved into sort of specialized area of consulting. So all in all, 5 years.
And 5 years. Yeah. Okay, so it takes more than 5 years for the word impactful to come back out of your vocab. Language that is impactful takes me straight back to McKinsey.
Purpose and all of those good things.
Absolutely.
So,
people were even talking about impactful dresses. I was like, no, no, that's just horrid. There's something aesthetically wrong about language usage. So what were the key challenges that still in that management consulting experience across your experiences, even after those two big firms, where your linguistic skill set was still a core part of your then corporate career?
I would say so, yes. I worked a lot in change management where things like external communications, internal communications are part and parcel of the kind of work you do in that space. Challenges, yes. When you do say to someone that I'm a linguist, but I'm working with a management consultancy, you work a little bit harder to you know, become credible with that client. But I think I also brought something different to the table. I wasn't a CA. I wasn't, you know, an economist or, you know, just the usual run-of-the-mill management consultant. And so I was able to communicate with people. I'm happy to meet new people, talk to new people, engage with new people. I do think
that's so interesting. You should say that. I wonder, you know, when I was working management consulting only for 12 months, after that, I thought I would either slip into a coma or lose my personality if I saw a maths model for one more day. But the things that we take for granted as BA students don't come easily to the number crunchers, the natural number crunchers, the accountants, the engineers that have now moved into consulting. And I stopped thinking of my language skill sets as soft skills because I realized for how many of my clients who had greater dexterity with numbers, the linguistic skill set was a hard skill they didn't have in place and which gave them anxiety.
Absolutely. I think telling a story is an essential skill, and building your language skills and really appreciating language for the powerful tool that it is, you know, it's absolutely crucial for business people and anyone really. Language is access. English is access.
Mm. So how did you transition then into the dirty business of PR? You look way too honest as she's giving like side eyes. You see, is anyone around here that might be an old client of mine?
You know, as I was working in that change management, human capital type space, what I really, really enjoyed, as I say, was that internal communications element, writing, sharing, helping people to bring their stories to life. And so I thought it would be a good idea to specialize in that area. I think once you found your niche and what you're good at, you really need to go in that direction, especially when you're young, so that you can really channel all your energy into, you know, being the best at that.
Mm.
I ended up at a PR firm. I did pretty similar work in that I was doing like reputation management, dealing with the sharks like yourselves in the media. But funny enough, I ended up, working for professional services clients. So one of my biggest clients was a management consulting firm. I had a law firm that I was working with. So even though it seems like the story's fragmented, Eusebius, it all kind of came together because I had that exposure in management consulting. I could speak corporatese. You know, we're talking impactful, yes, purpose and all of those good nuggets. And so I think that's really where Mint, the idea for Mint came about is there something out there where you have language practitioners who are business savvy, who understand how business works, how business people talk to each other? And yeah.
Okay. 18 minutes after 11, that sets us up nicely for the second part of the conversation. I'm going to ask Munene Khoza, the founder and principal consultant of Mint Language Consulting, why she was crazy enough to take a chance on herself to then become an entrepreneur with all its different risks and uncertainties, what Mint Language Consulting is about, and crucially, whether she's minting it.
702 and Cape Talk, Entrepreneur Corner.
Indeed, it is Entrepreneur Corner. We're talking to the founder and principal consultant of Mint Language Consultancy. So one of my favorite questions in this slot, I think I can now actually write an essay with different motivations. Were you just fed up with corporate, or was it just like, what was the motivation to actually start this business?
So, Eusebius, I'm going to be super diplomatic, because I still rely very much on that old network. I wasn't fed up, but I did feel something was missing. You know, I was working in the PR space, working with fantastic clients, but I was finding that I was only doing what I really love, which is the writing, which is being close to the language, close to the words, being a word nerd part of the time. So I thought, let me have a look around, see what's happening in the market, you know, what kind of jobs are available for word nerd like me. And I struggled, you know, for over a year. I found jobs and roles that partially met my needs, but didn't really speak to, you know, Munene the word nerd. So ultimately, I decided, you know, let me create my own thing. Let me create my own job in my own firm. I'm young enough that if it's a balls up, then, you know, I can still bounce back. But I just woke up one day and just thought now is the time. If I'm going to create something, I need to do it today.
You know what I love about your answer there? The bit where you say you're young enough. And if it's a balls up, which it hasn't been so far, and I'm sure it will go from strength to strength, you can always return. We so often forget, those of us who are privileged enough to be able to take a chance on ourselves, that it's not for life.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I mean? We actually, you can, just as you have exit options, you also have entry points back into corporate.
Absolutely.
So that's important.
And there's a lot of learning in the entrepreneurial journey that I think if I ended up back in corporate for any reason, would be of use. The resilience, the sales acumen, all of those things are transferable and applicable. Absolutely. In the corporate space as well.
Beautiful. Now let's get to the core business. Tell us, what exactly is Mint Language Consultancy? What does it do?
So in short, we help people to find the right words. So we offer organizations and individuals a series of language-based services that includes, you know, communication strategy, to copywriting, to editing, to proofreading, to translation services, anything language-oriented we can do for you. So it's really, really just a language service that's highly professionalized, and with linguists that are passionate about, be it English, be it Zulu, whatever the case is.
And have you found that the market understands that it has a need? Because sometimes we have to convince clients they have a problem.
No, that's probably been one of my big challenges, is how do I position myself? Because people will ask me, oh, so you're a proofreader. No, yeah, that's true to some extent, but that's not the be all and end all. People will say, okay, so you're a PR agency. And I'm like, no, again, it's part of it. So defining that value proposition has been a tough thing, and positioning myself and having people understand. But the more and more I talk to people about the business, the more the business grows, I'm getting better and better at it. And like I say, I really quite like our little strap line that says helping you find the right words, because that really is just the crux of what I'm doing.
The beauty of that strap line is that it's pithy and it's easy to understand.
Yes.
That is great.
Yeah.
It is also nice that you can say what you are not. But once you are given that interview, let's say you get an interview with, I don't know, the station manager here or the CEO of ProMedia, then obviously they want to know a little bit more. Okay. So you're helping us work with words. So if you take, not that we need help, we are cunning linguists here, but you know, let's say ProMedia decided, I don't know, man, why do we keep getting such bad word cloud associations with our brand? It must be something to do with maybe the kind of language we use in our presses when we define ourselves to market and potential advertisers. Give us a very practical, at least high level understanding of what kind of service you can provide in that context. Is that the typical kind of client that will come to you?
Well, firstly, I don't have a typical client. However, if I was faced with that conundrum, I think we would, as you say, we would have a look at what language you're putting out in the world, whether that's in print, whether that's in the syntax and, you know, language choices of your presenters. And we can do an audit on it. Again, my background is in linguistics. And so we can look at an analysis of, you know, what is the lexicon that you're pulling in? How are your sentences structured? What are you referring? Are you referring to protesters or demonstrators? There's a big difference between the two. So we could do a linguistics analysis for you and then make recommendations around maybe drop this word, drop this tendency or drop these kind of structures in your written or spoken language.
I think it's stunning. I really think it's a fascinating business proposition, particularly in our country, where language, I mean, this is true the world over, but particularly language is such a hotbed of political conversation. You suddenly have brands trying to use the language of the woke. I mean, I had Dion Cheng on a couple of weeks ago, and we spoke about the economics of woke.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then one's also going to be so careful because we as consumers of products and services can also sniff out people very quickly who are insincerely trying to pretend through language that they are in our world. So just tease out for me a little bit more sociopolitically why your kind of service is not a nice to have for a corporate listening to this conversation, why it is critical commercially.
Wow, Eusebius. So perhaps a good example is to go back to the dissertation I wrote when I did my MA. At that point in South Africa, there were a series of platinum mining strikes that were really, that crippled the industry quite significantly. That was in 2012 and 2014. So my dissertation looked at how these companies, you know, Implats, Amplats, the big platinum players, how were they framing the narrative around the strikes and what word choices were they making to that extent? And, you know, some of the findings were really, really interesting. For instance, I won't say which of the companies I looked at said so, but they frequently referred to those on strike as bandits. It's problematic because, you know, the connotations are negative. There's a criminality associated with being a bandit. And in many cases, there was no crime being committed. It's just that there was a disagreement. So that does some reputational damage. And, you know, once your reputation is shot, it starts to hit the bottom line.
Absolutely.
So that would be my motivation. Mm. That's the business case for being careful and purposeful. Mm. There's another consulting nugget. purposeful with your language because it does affect the bottom line.
We've only got 2 minutes left. I'm curious about the nuts and bolts of the business. How big is the business now in terms of size? Where are you located? What is your biggest cost in terms of your cost structure?
Okay, well, I'm in a lovely office in Four Ways. At the moment, it's just me and one other colleague of mine, but she has just been like a godsend and we work like an absolute well-oiled machine together. However, because of the range of services that I offer, including the translation work, some of the proofreading, etc., I realized I couldn't do it all on my own, and there's no shame in that. So what I've done is I've been working on an associate model where I have about 5 consultants that aren't employed full time, but as and when the work comes in, I pull them in and we work together on a project basis. And I suppose that's a learning from my Accenture and Deloitte days. You know, you build a team for the purpose of what you're trying to achieve. So yeah, just two full-time bods at the moment with a view to growing, really. I just want to build a hub of super business savvy linguists. Because very often, linguists come from an academic or journalistic background. And really how we want to be unique is in that we understand business.
Are you minting it?
Oh, Eusebius. Yeah, look, I would say we're doing pretty well at the moment. But you know how it is. In the beginning of that entrepreneurial journey, you often have to forego a salary so that you can invest in your business. And I've had to do that. But I'm happy to say that I am turning a profit. I am paying my salaries. And yeah, really, we are in our infancy. We've only been going since July, which we haven't really touched on. And I'm really just excited about where the business is going. That's and hopefully funny. We will be minting it soon and very soon.
Well, I hope you go from strength to strength. Yeah. I think you find an interesting niche in the market. So many people do not understand the link between poor, ineffective language choices they make and the bottom line. So there certainly is a need for your kind of service. If people want to get a hold of you, Munene, where can they get hold of you and the company?
Sure. We're on the web at mintlanguage.co.za. We're on Twitter. Handle is at mintlanguage. And they're welcome to email me on info@mintlanguage.co.za.
Thank you so much. All the best.
Thank you so much.